Hello, folks. Welcome to LRIS's podcast series. My name is Will Aitchison. We've got a fantastic guest for our podcast this afternoon, Alex Seiswald, who is a reporter. I'll let Alex talk a little bit about his background in a moment. He wrote an article that caught my attention in the end of December, and I thought it was the most important analysis of police, firefighters, and the last presidential election. What happened? How did we go from a position where a large number of firefighters and also police officers voted for President Obama and also voted for later President-elect Trump? So with that, Alex, welcome to the podcast, and thank you so much for participating.
Hey, Will. Thanks for having me.
Alex, will you give us a little bit of background of your background as a reporter?
Yeah, I've been in D.C. now for about 8 years. I came just before the President Obama's first inauguration, and that's kind of been my time here in politics. Very interested to see this big change that's about to happen in a few days with Donald Trump. But I kind of came out of the progressive journalism world, so at Salon and National Journal and Think Progress before that, and then came over to MSNBC and now NBC, and covered the 2016 campaign, mostly focused on Democrats. I covered the primary between Bernie and Hillary, and then the general election. And now I'm kind of focused on the rebuilding of the party and some of the figures who are going to fight Trump and, you know, may run for president in 2020.
Let's talk about the election, and let's talk about it through the lens of your article, which focused on the International Association of Firefighters, the IAFF. The IAFF has done polling for some time, hasn't it, after presidential elections to see how its members voted?
Yeah, a lot of unions do this. Understandably, they want to know, you know, what the kind of mood of their membership is. But I think one of the most fascinating results that I've seen from this election was the IAFF's internal polling. I mean, this is a group of voters who, on one hand, is very much looks like the Trump coalition. Firefighters are 85% white. They're more than 95% male. But, you know, they tend to live in cities because that's where firefighters tend to be. You know, you have volunteer firefighters in more rural areas. They're government employees and they're heavily unionized. So that's kind of created a balanced union in the past. It's one of the more conservative unions out there, but still has voted Democratic in 2008 and 2012, and especially further down ballot, where in 2012, according to their internal polling, their members voted for Democratic Senate candidates over Republicans by an 8-point margin. But this year, or last year, everything changed. Democratic support completely cratered among firefighters. Just 27% of the membership said they voted for Hillary Clinton, and nearly twice that, 50% said they voted for Donald Trump. So you went from, a membership that voted twice for Barack Obama to voting 2-1 for Donald Trump. And I think that's just an incredible microcosm of the larger change you saw last year.
What happened? Why?
Well, I mean, you know, we'll get a lot of different explanations of this, and we're still figuring it out. But I sat down with Harold Schaeberger, the union's president. He's been the president for 15 years, came up as a lieutenant in his local firefighter union, and has really spent his whole life doing this. And to him and to a lot of other people, the party has left his members behind, not the other way around. So as he sees it, the Democratic Party was built on white working class voters, union members, and it's lost its way. And it has focused too much on what he calls identity politics issues. It's been too aligned with the kind of coastal donor elites in major cities. And it's lost focus of that core economic message that, you know, you can go back to FDR about getting jobs and basic employment security, health security, collective bargaining rights. Those kind of bread and butter issues just weren't as big a part of Hillary Clinton's campaign. And there was a real resentment that just wasn't spoken to as far as he sees it. And Trump spoke directly to that, his message of making America great again, of bringing back jobs from overseas, and his national security message that really appealed to firefighters in a way that a Republican has never done in the past.
Now, the IAFF itself, did it take positions in President Obama's elections? Did it make an endorsement?
It has endorsed generally Democratic in the past. They held off on endorsing Hillary Clinton this year. She was trying to get an endorsement in the primary, and they resisted that. But then they did eventually endorse her in the general election. And so you have a kind of interesting situation for a union here where their membership, at least in this most recent election, is majority Republican, but they tend to endorse Democratic candidates. They tend to, you know, in Washington, they tend to be aligned with Democratic members of Congress, and that's where they've looked to support. So it's a major change for the country, but it's also a major change for this union and for a lot of unions who are waking up to a reality in which, you know, their decades-long association with the Democratic Party may now be a bit of a liability among their own membership.
Any ideas to how the IAFF will attempt to reconcile that?
Well, what President Schaeberger told me was that his union has always been more transactional than a lot of the other labor unions in town. They're not as ideological. They don't stick with Democrats on every issue up and down the ballot. And that's because they have been more split politically. So he said they're going to keep doing, you know, what they've done as far as the incoming administration. They'll work with them on their issues that matter to them in terms of grants for local fire departments, homeland security issues, Department of Transportation issues, Department of Labor issues. But my sense is that they're not going to get involved in any of the kind of larger ideological battles that the labor movement has been the driving force for the Democratic Party for years and years. You know, they've been the ground troops. They've supplied the funds. They've supplied the volunteers and the organizational efforts. And so I think what you're going to see, you know, certainly from the firefighters, but I think for some others too, that saw their membership move towards Trump, is kind of a retrenchment and falling back to just focus on their specific narrow issues, the issues that directly apply to their members, and not really getting involved in stuff beyond that.
I do want to talk to you in just a moment about firefighters as metaphor for lots of other groups in this last election. But before we leave the firefighters, I've been watching with some interest the selection process for the next chair of the Democratic National Committee, and what appears to be an increasingly prominent role played by the firefighters union in that whole process. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really unusual election where the only people that matter are the 447 members of the Democratic National Committee. So the voices of unions, of you know, powerful figures who are well known inside the party, but are probably not well known nationally to the public, those voices are unusually powerful because they can really sway those insiders who sit on that committee. So what the firefighters have tried to do is they've come out for Tom Perez, the labor secretary, for a couple more weeks here under President Obama. And they're trying to show internally that they can be just as progressive as anyone else. Tom Perez is certainly progressive. He's also a Latino, and they want to show that they're not just a union of, you know, white people, even though their membership is overwhelmingly white. But they're coming out against the candidate that the progressive movement has really gotten behind, which is Keith Ellison, who has the support of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. And it's kind of created an interesting dynamic where Schaeberger and the Firefighters Union, they like that kind of populist rhetoric that Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren talk about, but they've endorsed the candidate on the other side. And this DNC race has created a lot of interesting and unusual coalitions inside the party, and they want to be certainly at the center of that and have the ear of the party as it remakes itself so that, you know, if Tom Perez comes in, they can be involved in trying to roll back what they see as the damage that the party has done over the past few years and decades.
From 3,000 miles away here in Portland, it looked like Ellison was almost anointed. And it looked like the firefighters may have been the prominent group in saying, wait a minute, let's think this through. Is that too simplistic?
They certainly were one of the first big groups to come out and endorse Perez when he got into the race. But I will say there was, behind the scenes, a lot of resentment, or that might be too strong a word, but uncertainty about Ellison and about, as you said, the kind of anointment that was happening with all of these major leaders coming around him. I mean, he threw his hat in the ring just days after the election, and people kind of felt like, hold on a minute, we just lost this major race that we were sure we were going to win. We got to do some deep thinking before we pick the person who's going to head us. And another big factor is President Obama himself, who does not have a good relationship with Keith Ellison and has a very good relationship with Tom Perez. He had been pushing Tom Perez quietly behind the scenes to get into the race. I can say from my reporting that he personally lobbied him. Perez was also considering running for governor instead. And Perez was also very close to Hillary Clinton, who almost made him her vice presidential nominee. So you had major forces in the party who were unsure about Keith Ellison, were not ready to hand the reins to him and to the Bernie Sanders wing. When Perez got in, I think the Firefighters Union, you know, saw that, and they were the kind of canary in the coal mine for sure. But I think there's a lot of other people behind them.
Now, let's talk about firefighters as metaphor for what happened with other groups, in particular unions, but not just unions in the election. Is there an apt metaphor there?
Yeah, I think there really is, and that's why I wanted to do this story and to look at this union. I mean, you know, we've heard a lot about white working class voters since the election and the Democratic Party's problem with them. But this is kind of the perfect distillation. I mean, as I said, you know, this is a group that is nearly entirely white men, 85% white, 95% men. That is the overwhelming majority of these numbers. But they're not, you know, longtime Republicans. These are people who were open to the Democratic Party message, who voted Democratic for years and years and years. And it's a microcosm of the much larger decline in support from white working class voters to Democrats, which is, you know, we're talking about a lot now, but I think that's really the story of the Democratic Party. If you pull back the lens and look at it in the context of the last few decades and its uncertain future, I mean, this was a party that traces its roots to Andrew Jackson and Thomas Jefferson. It was founded as a party of the South, as a party of white working class farmers and laborers. And then it expanded to the North with labor union members and intellectuals. And so that was the party. That the white working class voters were the party for years and years and years. And for, you know, a host of various reasons, it's lost those voters, and it can afford to lose them, but it can't afford to lose them in the numbers that it did this year, or the numbers that it might, you know, going forward. And I think it will be a mistake for Democrats to, you know, write off the results of the firefighters or write off the loss of 70,000 votes in three states, you know, even though they won the popular vote, to just say that it was kind of a fluke and they'll do better next year, because it's one thing to lose the presidency and they could win that back again without doing much. But if you look down at state houses, at the House of Representatives, at the Senate, the party is just completely eroded underneath the top. And a lot of that has to do with the loss of people like these firefighters.
Let me end with asking you to put your predictive hat on. And I guess I'm going to ask you to put two different hats on. First of all, if you are the Republican Party, what do you do to hold on to these newly Republican voters? And if you're the Democrats, what do you do to get them back?
Yeah, great question. And I think that's exactly what a lot of people are asking right now. I mean, for Republicans, it would take a pretty, you know, major change. Trump was not of their party. He had to topple the party establishment and all of the obstacles they threw in his way to get there. And he did it on issues like running against, you know, free trade treaties and the kind of donor control of the party. And that will be a major concession for Republicans to give up if they want to hold on to these people. I mean, it, you know, the Republican Party has been a party of business interests for a long time. It has been a party of free trade for a long time. And Trump is not that. I think, you know, in the short term, they can hold on to these voters because they have power, and that gives them all kinds of possibilities to do things like pass tax cuts or other kinds of policies that appeal to people. But in the long term, you know, once the lid of power comes off and all the factions in the party have to figure out what they're going to do, those are unreconcilable. You can't have, you know, a Trump kind of populism and an elitist kind of Wall Street, you know, corporate money interest in the same party. I don't think that you can't support the same policies. For Democrats, I think it, in theory, should be easier. You know, on policy, at least, they're closer to it. They probably have to give up any remnants of supporting free trade. And, you know, they have to highlight some other things and tweak some things. But it's tweaks. Their message is what has to change. And it's a cultural issue that has to change, which is tricky. You know, it's not exactly in the realm of political operatives, but they need to convince these people that they support them, that they're on their side, that they understand their struggle, that they are not, you know, out of touch coastal elitists, which is very tough to do. We are all becoming increasingly isolated in our social networks and our worldviews, which are increasingly moving apart from each other. There's lots of social science data to support that. But if Trump, you know, with his appointments that he's been making so far, if he kind of does not rule as a populist leader, I think there will potentially be a lot of room for Democrats to say, hey, this guy is not giving you anything like what he promised. You know, we'll be on your side, and they can potentially win these people back.
Well, Alex, thank you again so much for the time, and really thank you for the article. I took the opportunity to read some of the other things that you've read, and man, you're good. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
That very much appreciate that. Thanks so much for saying that and for having me.
Okay. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you.